WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are a positively, it's baseball season here. It's baseball at Christmas. I'm waiting for my invitation from the Angelos family for the winter carnival. But instead, in lieu of that, we're just going to have crab cakes. I'm going to be at State Fair in Catonsville on Tuesday. Wearing my State Fair gear. I got to get a new State Fair shirt. Although this one fits nice, it's just getting a little worn. It's got the 12 chairs of Catonsville. This is like before the plague. I've had this. This is a pre-plague shirt. So, Evan, I'm coming for you. Get well soon. We'll be there on Tuesday. Dennis Colazzo from Coons Baltimore Ford will be joining us. Bill Cole will be joining us. Working on Tom Kelso, was a little under the weather, could not join us, and could not partake in the Maryland Lottery giveaway at Hollywood Casino on Friday. They do smell like gingerbread. I have the O Snaps. I have the Unwrap the Cash, top prize $5,000. And I also have the Peppermint Payout, which paid out $20 at the bar at Hollywood Casino in Perryville on Friday. Great guest up there, did a great turn for the Cecil County Feline Association. Had two beautiful guests on talking about kitties. We also had some awful football picks from me and Christian Horton, Amy Brennan. We also spent Thursday at Gertrude's, where we also had Maryland Lottery winners, and I wore my fun Window Nation floppy hat. We talked about Jiffy Lube Multicare. We did all that stuff with Dan Rodericks, whose show opens this week. It's almost sold out. It was like one ticket left for next weekend, so hurry out to get that. But I talked to Dan about Baltimore, and Dan got mad at me about stadiums and journalism and reporting, so we went back and forth, and then I gave him a nice – I gave Dan Rodericks sex, drugs, and rock and roll all in one package. So you're going to want to listen to that. You're going to want to watch that. All of it brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends at the Window Nation and Jiffy Lube. Also, John Shields from Gertrude's was on. We're related. I'm not really related to anybody, but I'm related to John Shields at Gertrude's. It's like all in the family. So it's a really, really fun week. Last week, as we began at Coco's with Rasig and Ron Cassie, you're going to be hearing all of that this week. Going to be giving away lottery tickets. We're going to be talking about things. We're going to be talking about bye week. We certainly had a lot of football to talk about, a ton. Talked football with Dennis. I talked football with Luke. But it's a little bit of baseball. We got to sneak a little bit of baseball in here. Luke, my baseball background and loving baseball, I love baseball so much that back in the 1980s, when we lost the football team and the Orioles had just signed Fred Lynn and Don Ossie and Lee Lacy. All right. So I'm giving you a little pressure point here. And Joe Altobelli's about to get run out for Earl Weaver again. So my dad left his job at the Point. He retired in 1984. He had a lot of time on his hands, and I had a baby, and I was 16 years old, and I'm working at the paper, at the News American. And I said to my dad, we got to get a satellite dish, man. Like, we got to get a dish because I want to be able to see all the games. Pop, I'm going to be a sports journalist. One day I'm going to own a radio station for a quarter of a century and have a Super Bowl winning coach as a partner. We're going to get a football team after you die, Pop. But in the meantime, I need a satellite dish. And my dad went out to Baltimore County, had to get a zoning variance to get a satellite dish. And you know where I grew up, Luke, little row house in Dundalk, right? So we went out in 1985, needed to get a satellite dish, and we need to find somebody to put a satellite dish up. And into the kitchen walks a man named Harvey Myers. Harvey's big, jolly fellow, big belly laugh. I put a satellite. This is a pretty good Harvey. I put a satellite dish up on there. You just got to put it up on the roof, and you point it at the satellites. And next thing I know, we got a satellite dish on the roof. Everybody in the neighborhood, we look like the Jetsons. It's 1985. Like, how old were you? You were this many. You were this many. Like, right? You were months, not years, right? In the summer of 85.
I was born in 83, so two, yeah.
So the summer of 85, okay, we get this satellite dish put up, and we have everything. And the satellite would have newscasters dropping F-bombs off camera because they thought they were off camera. They were off the air, but they were still on the satellite. So the satellite was an amazing thing. And this is back before Roger Goodell and Paul Tagliabue understood cable television and pay-per-view and NFL packages and dishes and all that, direct TVs. So 1985, we're the only people we know with a satellite dish, right? Like literally – we were first in technology. My dad loved sports. He loved having college basketball. Every baseball game was on that was televised. So when Chuck Thompson and Brooks were calling the game from Texas, we could pull it in on the satellite, and I could hear Chuck and Scott Garceau and Brooks just BS in between innings. Like, seriously. I vividly remember Bob Costas doing Toronto Blue Jays baseball in October of 1985. I came home from college at Dundalk Community College, afternoon games. Might have been playing the Royals. I have to think about the 85. Probably, yeah, it was the Royals. Saberhagen, right? So 85, the Blue Jays are playing from Exhibition Stadium. It's cold as hell, right? It's Toronto. They still hadn't won anything. And I remember Bob Costas, like, just talking off the mic between innings because we had the satellite dish, right? So Harvey Myers put this out. And obviously, I mean, you know the real reason I got it. The Houston Oilers, right? It allowed me to watch every Houston Oiler preseason game in August. I remember watching Houston Oilers, New Orleans Saints preseason game on that satellite dish in August. We got that dish in July. I tell you, because I remember the first things I watched on, right? So I watched Oilers preseason football on a satellite dish because there was no, there was a book with listings, but it wasn't accurate. Like a satellite book, it was a big fat book and it came every month. My dad subscribed for 10 bucks or whatever. Might have been $5 then. And we watch sports. We love sports so much. We had a satellite dish. This man named Harvey Myers puts a satellite dish in. And it worked. It was beautiful. I got my job at the paper. My dad had a satellite dish. I would go over to my parents' house just to watch the satellite, even when I left, when I lived on Gain Street. We didn't have cable in the city. I think the city screwed up now. We didn't even have cable. I had 7, 8 years of cable. I moved to Gain Street. No cable. It's like moving to China. Like, literally, like moving to North Korea. So anyway, that was in, this is the 80s. I had Bon Jovi, I had CDs, Girls, Amberjacks. Things were good. Don't cry for me. Even though the Orioles stunk. But 85, Harvey puts this dish in. I don't see Harvey. I don't know from Harvey. 1992, I'm knocking door to door. My hair was long. Like, my hair was out. It was this long in 1992. Amberjacks, Eddie Vedder, the whole deal, right? I go into the Emerald Tavern on Hartford because every day of my life, I got in my car and I drove all day. I drove every road, knocking on every single door, meeting every business owner and saying, I'm the guy who was at the paper, who did the scoreboard, who was the music critic, who was the hockey guy. Sometimes people knew me. Sometimes they didn't. I was on AM 1230. Dave Rausenberger was teaching me how to sell. I walk into the Emerald Tavern on the side door in the kitchen and Harvey's in the kitchen. And I'm like, sort of remember you. And I'm 23. It's 1992. And Harvey's in the kitchen. Hey, I'm the guy to put your satellite dish up. Everybody told me to go to the Emerald Tavern because he had 15 satellite dishes up. Dude, the Emerald Tavern looked like a science experiment. Ask anybody. He was the only one in town. The only one in town that put the football games on Sundays. He had every game. He had every TV. Harvey was the NFL ticket before there was an NFL ticket. So 1992, we have no football team. You're 7 years old. I'm an Oiler nut. I see Harvey. Harvey gave me $75 a week in cash to sponsor Nasty Nestor in the sports forum. And he said, hey, you're a DJ. Why don't you come out here on Sunday and Thursday and play some music? So I would come out Sunday and Thursday. He paid me $50 on Thursday, and he paid me $60 on Sunday. So I made $195 a week, and I think I was making $500 a week at the paper, maybe $400 a week. And it replaced half my salary, and I had to pay for my airtime and whatnot. But that's how this whole thing began. It was in 1992, 93, 94. So I went out there. I watched Warren Moon, 92, 93, 94, the Browns backers, Steelers fans. Bill Saul would sit at the bar, and he was this salty old linebacker who was sort of a bouncer and sort of a chef and sort of a bartender and sort of an old football player. He was kind of all the above. He was from Pittsburgh, and he would sit at the end of the bar, and it was an old cult bar. It was a big gambling bar. If you want to read about potty, have you ever been to a potty party?
I have not.
Well, you'd know if you'd been to a potty party. That's all I'm going to tell you if you were ever at the Emerald Tavern on a Sunday. So you wonder how this wackiness happens. We lost Harvey. Harvey went on all my road trips. Harvey and I ripped it up in Vancouver in 94 at the Grey Cup. I'll never, ever go to Vancouver without thinking of Harvey and being at Stanley's on Stanley. You can Google that. The Grey Cup. And Harvey was at Whiskey Joe's. My wife knew Harvey. Harvey's married to Greg Landry's wife is Harvey's daughter from Towson Transfers. So big love to Harvey and an RIP to Harvey as we begin to talk baseball because Harvey loved the Orioles too. So I didn't say much about that, but I did tell a little baseball story there about 1985 and how much I love baseball and Bob Costas. But these winter meetings are here, Luke, and we got Ronnie Stanley on the brain and Lamar on the brain and Matt Stafford on the brain and Cooper Kupp and Paco Nacua, just because I like saying his name. The winter meetings in baseball, this is the seed. And I hope they have a strategy, Luke. I don't, you know what I mean? Michael Lai's a smart man. Sig Medel's a smart man. They don't have a lease, and I'm going to continue that. And I know you don't want to go down that
Right.
river so much because you just don't, but I am going to begin with they don't have a lease with you and say these winter meetings, we're watching all of this and activity. And by the time people hear this, maybe Dylan Cease is an Oriole and Colton Cowser isn't, and Justin or Westberg isn't. And I don't know, Jordan Westberg. But this offseason in these winter meetings, and I've lamented this and I've talked to you about this. This place is so mismanaged. It's so poorly run. It's so not fronted right. It so has never been led right. They don't have a lease. That's all he's concerned about is bilking this $400 million and how he can steal this land when the team's gone. And I'm not convinced that they're going to have the financial wherewithal or the decision making at the top to strategize this in a way. And I do worry about where Mike Elias and his happiness meter is when he needs to do ish and knows he can, knows that they could, knows that they have financial wherewithal to do it. And John just doesn't see it that way.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you on that point. I mean, this is a 101 win team that has so much going for it, and this should be the time of year where they are financially, all of that. I mean, this should be the stars aligning to have that kind of an off season where, look, and I'm not even talking about increasing the payroll to 200 million or 250 million or anything crazy. Just increasing it because it's been so low for the better part of the last 5, 6 years, to make go out and make a couple really significant moves, and instead you're kind of left waiting. And let's be clear, it's not as though there has been a ton of movement overall, and we've come to expect this. I mean, Major League Baseball's free agency is not like the NFL. It's not like the NBA where you see guys move instantly. I mean, we're still waiting to find out where Shohei Ohtani's going to land. You know, it's certainly not going to be in Baltimore, but the point is that things just in general don't move as quickly when it comes to baseball. But you look at where this team is, it's not as though they have major surgery to do to this roster, right? I mean, you're talking about landing a starting pitcher that you'd like to think is in the top half of the rotation. Certainly they need to add a bullpen piece or two that you could pencil into the back end, whether, you know, I'm not even talking Josh Hader, but just a high leverage guy, you know, at least one, if not two. But beyond that, you're talking about a roster that you love. You're talking about a team that has so many good young players that, you know, there's so many different things that they could do to make this team better. And that's not to say they won't. But boy, you're left here waiting, and it's kind of at least where I am at this point in time, Nestor, where I'm not holding my breath for something to happen until it happens, right? Because, you know, we can sit here and talk
This is the
about
time
the
of the
trade
year where the
market
cold
or.
water comes for everybody who isn't some myopic out on Camden Chat or wearing a bird head, where you see and feel the difference in the seriousness of these other franchises and the people who run them and what they're doing with all this gambling money and all the civic money they're, besides intimidating AM radio hosts and their employees from clubhouse badges in Arlington, you know, stuff like that. And actually having their tickets on sale and actually having a lease and actually having a strategy for the $400 million they're trying to bend over the new governor for, right? Like all of that. But this is the time of the year where Major League Baseball meetings happen. And if you're an astute fan, and you are and I am, and you're connected to Ken Rosenthal just a little bit, who was at that 1985 game, by the way, on my satellite dish with Bob Costas and everyone since. You know, I love baseball and I'd love to see it work. And you know what, dude? I got my hair done by Paul Lamanti the other day. And no, I don't dye my hair. This is like what God gave me, I swear to God. And you know, I was talking some ball with Paul and looking around and seeing baseball stuff and thinking baseball stuff. Every day I'm looking for these couple of Louis Aparicio cards I need. So every day I'm sort of floating in a baseball space and thinking about baseball a little bit. I'm close enough, dude, that I really, really am living long enough and staying on the yoga mat and feeling pretty healthy for Chad Steele, for Greg Bader and anyone else, that I'm going to live long enough. I'm going to live long enough that somebody else is going to own the place and there's going to be something different. I thought about Cal Ripken the other day, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking about what's happened to him the last 20 years, owning baseball everywhere but there. And I keep thinking to myself, there's going to be an end to this. There's going to be an end to this, and there's going to be another owner, and I'm 55, and there's going to be something else that happens after this. And if I can be a part of affecting it, good for me. But like, I really believe there's going to come a winter meetings where this guy's not going to own the team. And I believe that because as bad as the Commanders looked against the Dolphins over the weekend, there is something different happening there. And I feel like there will be something different happening here. And that goes for the football team somewhere down the line too, when Steve doesn't want it anymore and find some new home for it. But I think we're getting closer to the end than the beginning with this Angelos thing. And I think some real journalists should be stepping up about all this crap that's going on. And I think at some point Manfred needs that, you know, they're going to mismanage this offseason. I'm pretty sure of that. And I don't even know what they're going to do with the lease. They've already mismanaged that five ways from Sunday. I just hope that this guy doesn't wreck Elias, because like I really think to myself, there's a point where we have to come to a winter meetings and you can say, well, we're a small market and we have limited means and stuff, but we don't have incompetency or right. An ownership group that I don't know how you could have any confidence in them based on the track record and based on the fact that they run and hide. The owner stuck his nose out three times. He hires Locke and Fora. You know what I mean? Like Kevin Brown, like all of that. Like there's, if he said anything, you don't believe it, but I'd like to think as we get here that there's like a real plan. And I know Elias has one. Now, whether it can be enacted or not, and you know, as well as I do, they do have more limited resources than other teams, and they do need to use it more wisely. But they also need to spend some of this money, and they also need to make good future decisions in regard to trades and do what their baseball guy tells them to do. And more than that, at some point, earn the confidence, not of just super detractors like me that have only witnessed this and talked about it every day of my life since I had a satellite dish with Harvey Myers in 1985 and way before that, but just – the fact that the rest of baseball is watching this, all the same people that came out free Kevin Brown 4 months ago are like going to be free Mike Elias if he can't take what he's built and do it the right way and have the financial wherewithal to do what he needs to do while the owner's goofing with the lease and doing all this other crap, because these other franchises are serious. And I think that's what I see at these winter meetings, that we could talk about the hapless teams in the NFL and teams that can't get out of their own way and the Browns Browning and whatever, when there's bad ownership. But on the baseball side, and you're competing with big boys. I mean, they're throwing $400 and $500 million around for Shohei Ohtani. You know what I mean? Like, they want to win.
Well, look, they won 101 games last year, and they're in a really good position with their roster and with their farm system. Hypothetically, they should have some money to spend, to your point, even if you acknowledge, okay, it's a smaller to mid-market, wherever you want to put them, they can certainly spend more than they've spent in recent years. So I guess for me, and you know, as you laid all that out, and look, do I have confidence in ownership? No. Do I have confidence in baseball operations? Yes, I do. But they still need the resources. And for me, this is where I look at this thing as we're waiting on what's going to happen with the lease and everything that's connected to that and how it's all related at the end of the day. You know, whatever their payroll is ultimately going to grow to, it stems from that deal and what that's going to look like. But I guess for me, it's hoping that winning 101 games, winning the division, being the number one seed, I'm hoping that's not the high watermark for this current era of Orioles baseball. I'm hoping that's not the high watermark. I'm hoping that's the beginning. And that doesn't mean they need to win 105 this year. But the point is, I'm hoping that, and this specifically pertains to John Angelos, but just the organization in its entirety, I'm hoping there's not a thought that mission accomplished. Just because you won 101 games and you were the number one seed and you won your first division title in 9 years, which was great. That was fun. It was a heck of a season. I'm not going to throw cold water on that or diminish that or belittle that, because it was that great of a season. But what you're hoping is there's not this sense of satisfaction that that's good enough, right? And that's where you go into the offseason and say, okay, what can we do to augment this team? What can we do to get better? And, you know, and it doesn't have to be spending $300 million on a starting pitcher, but it needs to be more than Kyle Gibson or more than, you know, Jordan Lyles. You know, you think about where they've been the last couple of years. You need to aim higher than that. And of course, Gibson signed with the Cardinals already. You know, he's
how
gone.
Much?
You know,
$29 million, right?
What? Kyle Gibson? No, that was what? $13 million, I think, with the Cardinals.
Million.
Yeah, yeah. Sonny Gray signed 3 years, 75 with St. Louis. But you know, the point is, you know, what's next, right? And I don't want this to be that, oh, you won 101 games and you made the playoffs and you were good and people were more excited than they were 3 years ago. And like, that's all well and good, but I don't want that to be the high watermark. And that's where you go into the offseason and say, okay, what's next? What's the next step? And yes, a big part of that is going to be improvement from within. Does Kyle Bradish have another level to hit? Does Grayson Rodriguez have two more levels to hit? Is Gunnar Henderson going to blossom from a rookie of the year to an MVP, serious MVP candidate? Same with Adley Rutschman. I mean, you go down the list. There are
so
all
many
these
things to talk about like that don't cost them any money, right?
Right,
right.
And right. And that's a good thing. Let's be clear about that. In the same way that when the Ravens draft future Pro Bowl players, that's a good thing to have.
We're not talking about
like
Kyle Hamilton's money right now. We're talking about his productivity.
Right. Exactly. So so that's where I praise them and what they've done and what they've accomplished to this point. But now you ask what is next for the Baltimore Orioles, and that's where things get complicated. And it's not because of any doubt in Mike Elias or the players that they have on this current roster, but it's what do you do now to put yourself in position to be better? And again, that doesn't mean that you have to go from 101 wins to 108. In fact, if you ask me right now, do I think the Orioles are going to be better record-wise this year than they were last year? I'm probably going to say no, and I don't mean that in a negative way that they're going to fall off and not make the playoffs or anything like that, but I just know how a 162-game season works. So even if you're only winning 97 games next year, what have you done to your roster to put yourself in better position for October? And again, top half of the rotation starting pitcher, whether it's, you know, look, free agency is what it is at this point. I'm not holding my breath on them spending money, but they do have resource after resource after resource to go out and get a Dylan Cease or to go out and get Corbin Burns or whoever, you know, whoever you want to throw into that conversation. I mean, there's a number of pitchers that you know, that are believed to be on the market, you know, on the market for the right price in terms of prospects. And the Orioles, as we've talked about, you can only hoard these prospects for so long. So, you know, go out and get Shane Bieber, you know, whoever it is. So that's where I kind of look at this thing and, you know, because of this lease situation, because of John Angelos and my utter lack of confidence in that regard in terms of spending, not spending more money, because they're going to spend more money just by the fact that they're, you know, the players already in on the roster are going to be making more money. But in terms of markedly increasing payroll, I'll believe it when I see it. So if you're going to acknowledge that, then you are looking more on the trade front. And that's not a bad thing per se. I'm not opposed to that. But until you see them pull off a deal, you're kind of left here waiting, saying, okay, what is going to happen? You know, is it going to be Dylan Cease? Is it going to be Corbin Burns? Or is it going to be someone who's marginally better than Kyle Gibson in the way that Kyle Gibson was a little bit better than Jordan Lyles the previous year? So, you know, until they make that splashier move, for lack of a better description, you're kind of left here wondering and waiting and, frankly, doubting because of ownership at the end of the day.
Well, the Kyle Gibson thing, and I said $29 million, I meant 24, because it had an option that kicks in if he hits innings and he gets another. I mean, well, that's a real acknowledgement, because he would have hit those guarantees if Angelos would have given him that, they would have been on the hook for $12 million more. And it sounds like, you know, he's yesterday's trash. He's not good enough to be here, and the Cardinals just put $24 million into him potentially. I hear you, but I wasn't wacky when I said $29 million, and you said 13. I'm like, hold on, let me look it up, because I did the math wrong. I did 12 and 12 and one at 25, but it's still
right.
He's not good enough here, and it's not a good value, and it's too much money. And he was Like, no offense to all the, and look, I didn't meet any of them. You're in their locker room every day. I'm not. The people out there can answer their own questions as to why they let you in and not me in to know these guys. But I don't know any of these guys. I only know them through television, and that's through the lens of whatever John Angelos is allowing his employees to say and film and do and be, with the free Kevin Brown sitting behind all of it. But Kyle Gibson, to me, seemed like the best grown-up they could have around that version of the Sutcliffe from back in the day, or that version of the Palmer, or that version of the Flanagan, or that Sage kind of guy they were always trying to bring in here with every Doug Drabeck and every washed-up pitcher they ever brought in here, was to say, we want to have a veteran in there to show young guys how to do it. There was an extra value for him. Cardinals saw that value, right? And if they didn't, somebody else would have given him something like this, because he does take the ball every fifth day and he does have value. And that value says that's what $12 million a year buys. Now, you want to go top shelf? I mean, you're just buying a rail. You know what I mean? You're buying a rail number four starter for $12 million a year, John, and he's going to cry about money. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're in a real room with the real John Angelos, he bristles at this. And to your point, we got to do better than that, but will they? And at what cost? And when I say at what cost, if they go get Cease and they give away half their farm, okay, and I know why they're doing that, because it's a little cheaper and they're going to have to go to arbitration with him at some point, but it keeps it cheaper in the near short term, which isn't the real strategy of winning. It's the strategy of, my dad might die any minute and they might throw me out of here. I just need to walk out of here with as much money as I can get. That's the reality. That's not nice, but that's the truth. And that goes back to the beginning of, there is no long-term management here. They're buying green bananas because, like, nobody in their right mind thinks this guy's going to really own the team when all is said and done. But, you know, with all due respect to my friend Harvey, who hung on a long, long time, at the end of his life, and clearly Peter's hanging on, this could go on a long time. I don't know how long it's going to go on, but it could be over by, a week from Friday. I don't know. But this is not the way the Baltimore Orioles should be operated. And it's not the stuff we should be talking about during the winter meetings. And we haven't even gotten to the lease, only because Kelso's sick. Get well soon, Tom. But when we talk about the baseball team, when we suspend talk of a 9-3 football team and bye week and Lamar and Super Bowl, and we go to talk about the baseball team, even when they win 101 games, we have to sit here and wade through all sorts of ish that doesn't pertain to what they're wading through in other places. They have their own dramas in for the Yankees and the Red Sox and money and taxes, and the whole sport has a television drama. They have the A's moving, the Rays doing whatever they're doing. They have cheating going on left and right. They have this gambling issue. They have streaming issues. They have all of these issues, but most franchises are focused on, how do I get the best players? How do I get into the best place? How do we maximize our budget? Here is our budget. Here's the reality of our money. How do we communicate with our fans? How do we sell tickets? They know their tickets on sale, man. We don't talk about them like they're normal, even though they just won the American League East and won 101 games, which we almost never thought we'd see. it's rarefied air. It's uncharted territory, but it's also really, really treacherous when they don't do things like everybody else does them, really.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and try to argue with you about that point. I think what's frustrating, and I'm going to throw another name out there right now, Jackson Chourio, Milwaukee Brewers, top prospect, just signed, agreed to an 8-year, $82 million contract. Now, he hasn't played in the majors yet, but the Orioles, with all acknowledging ownership, payroll, lease, all the small market, mid market, however you want to describe the Orioles, all that. And we know, that's been part of the discourse for a long, long time now. Even if you're not going to spend money and go out and spend $150 million on a free agent pitcher and talking about how wise that is, and talking about how wise an investment in a Kyle Gibson type would be. And again, the Orioles need to be aiming higher than Kyle Gibson at this point in time. Right. As much as I love Kyle Gibson, the person.
Well, if you're aiming higher, you're aiming higher than $24 million, Gary. Let's start with that. Right.
but in the meantime, where is the deal for Jackson Holliday or Gunnar Henderson or Adley Rutschman, who's now two years into his major league career? The Brewers, who, by the way, John Angelos, that was one of the teams he cited when he talked last spring, right? One of his sessions with the media that was full of empty promises of showing books and all that kind of stuff. He talked about three teams that he aspired to for the Orioles to be more like: Tampa Bay, Milwaukee, Cleveland. Well, the Brewers just gave their top prospect an 8-year, $82 million contract to buy out, a couple, presumably 2 years of free agency. And who knows where they'll be? I mean, Brewers might trade them 4 years from now if this kid ends up being, a stud and they know they're not going to pay him. I mean, we know how that works with small to mid-market teams in that regard. But, that's what's frustrating, I think. Even if the Orioles weren't spending money on free agents, if they had locked up a Gunnar Henderson, or if they locked up a Jackson Holliday, or they locked up a Grayson Rodriguez and bought out 2 years of free agency, whatever, and these deals vary. I mean, the Braves have been a great example of this. Look how many young, controllable players the Braves signed to contract extensions. That set them up to have this long-term run of success. And I get it. They've lost to the Phillies in the playoffs the last couple of years, and frustration on that front.
And this is when Uncle John would say, have you seen their streaming numbers? Have you seen their community? Have you seen the enclave that they built there? That's what finances all of that for the spreadsheets down the line. That guys like you and Dan Connolly, you don't understand money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what he would say. He would say they have
all
money
his,
that,
with his
that's
years
on their
of
books in 2028 that we can spend that money. I mean, that's what he would say to you.
And what anyone should be saying is yes, because of all of your years of expertise running successful businesses, right? So,
well, by the way,
Angelos,
you said he had a meeting with the media. He ain't never met with the media because I ain't never been there.
Oh, you know what I meant, though. I hear what you're saying. But the point is, if you are going to be a small market team that runs themselves a certain kind of way, part of that is then extending some of your young players. I mean, the Rays have done that. And look, the Rays have traded away players too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the Tampa Bay Rays are the gold standard of how you should run your organization. But if you cite them as a team you're aspiring to be more like, and look, in certain ways, it's great to be like the Rays in certain ways. But even the Rays have extended young players, and putting aside what happened with Wander Franco and the off field and that whole thing, but the idea is they identified a young player on their roster who was a difference maker, who was a franchise altering kind of talent, and they signed him to a long term contract. So if you're not going to be a big spender in free agency, then how are you going to keep this thing going long term? And look, a big part of that is obviously drafting and developing, and they've done a great job with that. But to extend this, to make this not a 4 or 5 year window, but to make it a 10-year, or in the Rays case, it's been what, 15 years now where they have been not the top contender in baseball year after year, but they're a playoff contender year after year after year. And they've been a little better than that at times, but they have had that churn where, yes, you're going to trade away some players and you're going to make some difficult choices, but they also did have extended some players too, so that needs to be part of the equation there. And I think so many Orioles fans, and whether you're talking about pie in the sky, unrealistic dreams of signing Blake Snell, or if you're talking about trading for someone, whatever it might be, just the sheer act of extending one of your young guys and saying, okay, you know what? Still questions about what the payroll is ultimately going to grow to, still working out the lease, all those different things. But they extended this guy and they've got Jackson Holliday.
What would that cost them with Henderson? Henderson's a $200 million extension, right?
I mean, it's going to be a lot. I mean, the fact that he's already been, he got top 10 votes for MVP, let alone talking about the fact that he won.
I just said $200 million to an organization that's never spent anything like that ever.
Well, they ever. $170 million for Chris Davis. So they have. I mean,
The old man almost had dementia at that. I mean, I'm not even convinced he knew what he was doing at that point. I really don't know that he knew what he was doing. I mean, like literally, because that was so out of character for him, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, though, they were spending money. It's just they weren't spending it very wisely at that point in time. I mean, their payroll had gotten to like 10th or 11th in baseball in circa 2016. So, but you got to make smart decisions. And but the point is, you know, the Brewers did this with Jackson Chourio, who hasn't made his major league debut yet, and it was still 8 years, $82 million. So, you know, if it's not Gunnar Henderson, maybe, you know, see if you can get it done with Jackson Holliday. And he might say no. I mean, he's clearly got a father who understands the business, and he has representation that, you know, is shrewd, you know, understands how this all works. So it might be a, you know, they might have approached him and he says kick rocks. But the point is, you got to do something at some point in time here to really instill some confidence in your fan base that, taking nothing away from last year, I'm not being dismissive of that, but in terms of this staying healthy long term, yeah, at some point in time, you've got to make some moves that are going to ensure that it stays healthy long term. And I don't think it's just, oh, we're just going to, we're going to trade Adley Rutschman when he's a year and a half away from free agency. We're going to trade Gunnar Henderson when he's 2 years away from free agency. Look, they might do certain things like that, but at some point in time.
You said have to. Have to would mean Boros wants $225 million, you want to give him $150 million.
Sure.
That would mean have to.
And if that's and by the way, and this is not just an Orioles thing, there are smart organizations who, the Ravens do this in the NFL, and I get it, it's a salary cap sport, but the idea is you place a certain value on a player and then you don't budge from that, right? And the Ravens have done this.
Hey, dude, I don't know that I would have given Machado all that money when he's throwing bats at people and starting fights. And like, I mean, you know, I never thought he was a great face for the franchise. And certainly the Chris Davis thing, it's hilarious. The old man gave him all this money knowing he'd be dead or gone. I mean, he's getting paid for the 15 years. So like, Peter made this deal with him that was unlike anything else, even into the future and future money and stuff like that. I'd love to know John's philosophy as a fan of the franchise for how he feels about, you know, like all of these fireside chats he thinks he does. What is the plan? What's the best plan? Let's talk, because we're going to talk about that. Intelligent fans are going to talk about what the best way to do this is for the current Baltimore Orioles, given owners in wherever he is, kids are running the team, the television network thing's a mess. Like, to all of that and crying poor and selling off dad's properties and fighting with his brother, all not having a lease, all the things that we're seeing happening, the turtling up and the crying poor, Luke, he can't look rich. You know what I mean? He can't buy steak right now because he's cashing welfare checks. You know what I mean? Like, they look poor. They are poor until they spend money. Then they're not poor anymore. And we're poor because of that Chris Davis thing. I mean, they have all – nobody's downtown. Skyboxes, this. They don't have their tickets on sale. They don't have a lease. So there's all of that. Do people not come because of the crime, or they not come because they lose 100 games? Or they not come because of price? Or they not come because they don't feel value? I don't know. But it's very, very easy for him to say – no dinero, no I, you know, like I don't have the money right now. And he's still got to pay $120 million to the learners. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to the finances of the team that are going to sit above and beyond. They don't want to sign to you're saying pie in the sky, that they would actually sign the best pitcher in baseball when they won 101 games and they have a low payroll and they have a high ceiling and they move the left field fence back for this purpose to attract the best, not to sign Kyle. I mean, I could sit here and play this game all night. I could take phone calls. I could sound whiny and old man on my lawn and all that. They have a real opportunity to capture the hearts and the minds and the spirits of the community. And they've just done a really lousy job of it after 101 wins. I mean, even just the fact that we're talking about it in this term and they don't have a lease and they lied about it and they made the governor lie about it. It's just, it's gross. And it's bye week and we got a football team playing this week and we're going to be on the purple magic carpet ride of Lamar every week. But I just want to do this on camera. Shame on them that this is where we are for the franchise when there should be good news coming every week. We should have a pitcher this week, a long-term deal for Henderson next week, some conversation about other stuff, yeah. A deal made, who's playing shortstop, who's playing third base. There should be a winter carnival. They should have tickets on sale. I should be getting my ass kissed by the Oriole bird wearing a Santa outfit. We should all be laughing and making money for cystic fibrosis and doing good holiday deeds. We should all be doing that. And Gunnar Henderson should be signing free autographs in front of the Brooks Robinson statue. Like, all that should be going on. But it's not, because I don't own the team, and this stiff does.
Well, it's why I made the point a few minutes ago that, you know, my biggest concern for the Orioles at this point, from a baseball standpoint, and again, getting into everything you talk about, it's all tied together. Lease on down, ownership on down. But that's why I said my biggest concern is that we've already hit the high water mark, and because of what you just said, and that would be a shame. And if you're John, and this is where, if I'm looking at this through the lens of how John Angelos might be looking at this, he's saying, you know what? Why are we going to spend more money when we won 101 games? You know, we had the second lowest payroll in baseball and we won 101 games. The Dodgers didn't win the World Series, and look at how much money they spent doing that. The Braves, as much as we love the battery and everything that we want to aspire to be in that regard, they didn't win the World Series, and look how much money they spent. So I don't agree. Let's be clear. Me saying that doesn't mean I'm saying I agree with that. But if you're John Angelos, you might be thinking that way. And if that's the case, then that's where I worry that 101 wins in 2023 ends up being the high watermark, because you're not investing long-term in keeping your young players. And by the way, Mike Elias can still draft and develop really well, but you're not going to be picking in the top five anymore. So inherently that becomes more difficult. So look, people will sit here and say, oh, that's a really cynical way of looking at it. Okay, well, John Angelos, prove us wrong then. Go prove us wrong. You know?
Well, I'll just say this, and this is to quote the late, great Mike Flanagan, while I did a segment here on Harvey Myers and other people I loved and I learned things from in my life. Flanagan told me when it was kind of all over with, and he's on television, we would sit up at the Panera up in Hunt Valley and talk about life over coffee. Sometimes Jim Duquette would join us. And he said to me, McPhail once said to me, why feed him steak when they'll eat hamburger? And I've been with you, and you like hamburgers. I love hamburgers. I was over Coco's. I mean, I'll eat me a hamburger. I mean, Jimmy Buffett, give me a cheeseburger. You know, I like all that, but If that's your barometer, we're going to be a hamburger restaurant because steak's too expensive. And who'd want it anyway? Who'd want the best? We just would, you know, and I love me some meatloaf and Salisbury steak because I'm from Dundalk. Luke, we'll take a timeout. And when we get together, we'll talk about the big acquisition of Cease and the extension of Henderson and the new lease agreement. And we'll do all of that, I'm sure, before the Rams get here this week. Luke's going to be out in Owings Mills all week, this week, next week, every week, all weeks, as long as they let him, as long as they let us. We're so grateful for the ability to do our jobs covering the team. But big appreciation for everybody on the 25th anniversary. We've had a hell of a week. A lot of crab cakes, Coco's. We went to Gertrude's. I found out that John Shields and our family. It's true. Go listen to it. Dan Roderick's this week, as well as our friends up at Hollywood Casino. Amy was such a great guest, too. Had a lot of fun with her. All are brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I like the O Snaps because they're dollar tickets. You can get a couple of them. And they smell good, too. So the Maryland Lottery, as well as Win Donation, and our friends at the Jiffy Lube MultiCare, sponsor the Crab Cake Tour. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt because I'm going to be at State Fair this week. We're going to be at Far and Daughter next Friday in Timonium. And then we're going to be at Wise Markets Christmas week. And which I'm going to eat a lot Christmas week. And sounds like eggnog to me. And then we're going to be, but never that fruitcake stuff, please. And then we're going to be at Fadley's right after Christmas, because who doesn't need a giant Fadley's crab cake on December 28th? Not I. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking baseball, even if they don't want us to.